from my mom's basement. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who asks if coffee is for closers, how come I'm drinking like two pots a day? Rob Cesternino. Bell was out of reach. How you guys doing? Very excited to be back here once again. Still on the road here, back at my mom's house after the live know-it-alls from Wednesday night. And I have to say, holding up pretty good. It's been a very busy week with all of the podcasting. Got into the city on Tuesday. We did a Big Brother Canada podcast on Tuesday night. Wednesday night, we had the live know-it-alls. And now here I am back at my mom's house. Talked with Malcolm this morning. Very sad to hear Malcolm out this early in the game. I thought that Malcolm was still taking everything in stride. If you haven't heard my exit interview with Malcolm, it's up on the website, and as well as our live know-it-alls. I thought we had a really fun live show from Wednesday night, and that's all up on robisawebsite.com. So we're going to talk with Richard Hatch here today and get his take on many of the game changers that he has gotten to know over the years, and obviously get his take on the major tribal council upset from Wednesday night, and much more here on this interview. The next podcast we're going to do is going to be our voicemail show with Liana Boris. So be on the lookout for that. You won't miss it if you're subscribed to the podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And we greatly appreciate your feedback and iTunes ratings in the iTunes store at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guests today on the podcast. Of course, that we couldn't let a season of The Game Changers go by without checking in with the man who really invented the game as we know it, the Survivor legend himself, the great Richard Hatch. Richard, how are you?
Well, I'm glad you couldn't let a season go by without me. Other people don't seem as interested.
Yeah. Rich, should we call you a game changer? Is that fair to say? Or there was no game before you came along?
Let's go with that. Okay. Let's go. There was no game. So that's why I'm not a game changer. Hey, I think game changer, like all of the titles they use, is something to bring viewership and get people interested, and it fits to some extent for some of these folks, and for many it doesn't, and that's fine with me.
Yeah. Well, Rich, I'm very excited to talk to you. I know you think that I just say it, but it is always a treat to get to catch up with you, even after all this time. So very excited that we can do this from time to time and talk about this game.
Same here, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Rich, last night was such a crazy tribal council. We've been calling it maybe the craziest one that they ever had. Whether it was good or not, I think that we're still trying to sort that out. But Jess, could you take us through your reaction to how that all played out and ultimately Malcolm going home?
So my reaction is the same as how I react to almost everything I see in Survivor. It's a fascinating look at who we are. And just as an example, we can take Sandra. You know, in that tribal council, I saw intense confidence. And what's the problem with that? Everything. You know, here's a woman who's won the game twice. Clearly, she gets it. She understands how to play Survivor to win. Yet, I think something's happened, and it was exposed in this tribal where she's just a little too cocky, and I don't think she's got a chance as long as that's her attitude.
Now, Rich, this is very odd for me hearing this from you, because yeah, I feel like that isn't that your MO, cockiness, with all due respect?
Well, yes, with you. And yes, to the audience. Yes, being honest to people, talking about my capabilities. I feel I'm pretty capable. But when you're in the game and you're playing the game and you're talking to people in the way that she was about the things that she was certain of, this and there's no idol. I'm not going anywhere. Those things aren't good. They're just not good gameplay.
Right.
And And you know, people on social media have talked a little bit about how she's got no votes yet. That's not an indication necessarily that you're playing well. That really has little to do with it. Mm-hmm. You can have no votes all the way until the episode before the final one and get all your votes then. It makes no difference.
Yeah.
It's about how you're impacting the other players. And if you're not 100% aware of that at all times, and that's the exhausting part of Survivor, as you know, then I think you start to lose your potential for winning. And so that concerned me in watching the Tribal Council. She really was wrong, first of all, about a number of things. And she was in danger, and there was an idol. But worse for me was watching her expose herself that way to the other players. And we'll see how that plays out.
Okay.
For me, so long-ass answer to your question. For me, the Tribal Council was interesting because it's new and it's a different twist. And I feel for Malcolm because I like how sincerely he loves the game. But I don't believe it's just about a twist, you know, getting him out. I think that's too easy. I think he has to accept responsibility for not being in a better position, for not better preparing to be someone other than the go-to guy to get rid of.
Yeah, I kind of suspected that you were going to say that, because I feel like I've heard you say in our previous conversations that, you know, there is no such thing as fair. You know, whatever happens, happens, and you just have to deal with it. Am I correct in saying that that's how you view the game?
It's really close. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's not about fairness.
Right.
Yes, I agree. And the preparation there that I'm talking about is recognizing how you're perceived at all times and doing the best you can to prepare to prevent things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think he could have done more at Tribal Council, and I think he could have done more prior to Tribal Council. So watching him go, I could hear the across the country, I could hear the and the crushing, and clearly, you know, Malcolm was sad, and I understood, and I totally understand the sadness. God, you know, one of the things I got to say to you, Rob, because your audience is so vocal, mm-hmm. I talk honestly and harshly, and I tweeted this the other day, sometimes harshly, about players and how they play the game, not about the people. This isn't about these people and how they live their lives. Many of them, most of them, I guess, I've met and enjoy, you know, spending time with.
And at least tolerate, right?
Yeah, and at least tolerate. But in the game, I'm not going to hold back sharing with you. Yes. and my people who enjoy my commentary about what it seems obvious to me is their gameplay, whether it's positive or negative, and what could be improved, et cetera. I think that's what Survivor fans want to hear. So when I talk about people pretty directly or harshly, like Tony, for example, I'm sure we'll get to today.
Yes.
You know, it's got nothing to do with who Tony is. I'm sure, I haven't met Tony yet, but I'm sure I'd really, really like Tony.
Yeah.
But jeepers crow. I mean, you know, it just, he wasn't playing well. And why beat around that bush?
So anyway, okay. Well, let's go stick with Malcolm here for a moment. And you said there were things Malcolm could have done differently. Do you have any specific examples of something Malcolm could have done either prior to or at that Tribal Council?
Sure. So the arrogance, the cocky kind of, I'm here next to JT, I'm kind of commenting and participating in a way that's showing how comfortable I am. And I know this is probably going to sound subtle to people who don't play the game, but the game is all about subtleties. Doing anything other than that kind of expressing sometimes maybe concerns about whether or not he could manage a particular challenge, or not always being so so confident, so prepared, so straightforward, mm-hmm. and be believable about it. I mean, ask yourself what could happen. I mean, it's really, this is another thing I think viewers would be surprised about. Survivor's much more about honesty than you would imagine. If you can get honest with yourself, if Malcolm could have, he could have seen that he could have gone last night.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's really hard to put yourself in that situation, and my heart goes out to him. You know, the thing that I've been thinking about as we're talking about this, is there any way they could have kicked JT to the curb? Is there any way that group could have said, you know what, that we don't want JT, but then does he flip back to the other group then? Is there any way that they could have put their votes on, gotten both sides to vote out JT?
Yeah. So I'm talking when I'm answering your question about things that could have been done all through the game and in the tribal council. Your question is about in that tribal council. And the answer is yes. I mean, as so many things, as you know,
yeah.
that tribal council could have taken 50 other directions than the one it took. And they all would have been interesting. It certainly would have taken a different direction if I were there. I would never have tolerated the lack of exposure to so many conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I would have created a diversion, and I would have made the conversation be all up front, out loud. I would have talked about who was going. I would have put it out there. I would have, you know, gotten commitments from people vocally. Yeah. I would have used names.
I don't want to be super results oriented because it didn't work out for Malcolm, that, you know, we can come up with a million other things that he could have tried. But I guess that the elephant in the room, probably, I would think, is that probably if you're listening to this podcast, you're saying like, hey, Rich, weren't you in a very similar situation in Survivor All-Stars when you famously were bamboozled? Where isn't there such a thing as the situation that you could have not done anything different? Or do you look back at Survivor All-Stars and think that there were a lot of things that you too could have done differently?
There were things I could have done differently that I wouldn't have because I didn't know. So here's the difference. I truly was bamboozled, which is why I smiled and laughed and did it. I really hadn't, this is going to sound harsh, I really hadn't believed that Kathy and,
Lex?
I was in the water with.
Colby?
Ethan. Colby, Kathy and Colby were as stupid as they were. And here's what I mean by that. In gameplay, I told them and carefully crafted for them exactly how it would play out if they were to get rid of me, and explained that you shouldn't yet. Yes, I get it that you want to and you need to get rid of me at some point, but this really, truly should not happen. And here's why. You'll be next, and then you – and they were.
Yeah.
So here I was in tribal council, and I was relatively comfortable that they understood reality, the honesty. I mean, it wasn't something I was making up. And I was wrong. Were I less confident? Were I less sure that they understood that? Then I could have tossed things into the air. Last night, there's no way anybody could have known anything because nobody knew what on earth that was going to be like.
Yeah.
So it was one of those situations that calls for pretty drastic measures, I think, and exposing people and calling people out, talking about who's going to go, depending on who you are, could have been like that. That certainly could have helped Malcolm.
So do we have any takeaways for a future player who's going to be in this similar situation? Is the right move just to be more direct and say and basically state your intention? Is the right move to be even more keeping your cards closer to the vest? What should we take away from how this played out for Malcolm?
Well, for Malcolm, I don't think he should have been so it was too late for him to have done the kind of subtle, quiet thing. I think he needed to be more in control of what was taking place then. And so he should have you know, really stepped out. He didn't know everything that was happening between JT and the other side. He had to assume that everything was going his way, and it just wasn't, and I wouldn't have been comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
But other people, like Haley, how she sat there and she said, well, okay, but I don't think it's going to work out for you. Well, see, it didn't harm her, but she was trying. She was being pretty direct. I liked her boldness. I don't know if you responded to that the same way, but you know, she didn't have a lot of options there, and she was good at being pretty bold.
Yeah, I've liked her this season. I want to know from you, in terms of Malcolm, at the point where JT goes and talks to Brad Culpepper, would that have been a non-starter for you at the point where somebody who's in your group goes and has this sidebar with somebody from the other alliance?
Yes. I would have gone with them, or I would have been very, very vocal with the people who were standing there, who were remaining on my side when JT left. Listen, Sandra, you guys, listen, pay attention. This has to happen. Even if I hadn't been kind of leading things to that point, I would have pointed out why that was so dangerous.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about this so much from Malcolm's perspective. I'd love to sort of look at it from JT's point of view and what he's trying to do. Now, surely he's in a bad spot numbers wise. He's the only person from his original tribe that's on this group of six. And him and Sandra seem to be gunning for each other. But Rich, as a former winner, as somebody who has been targeted for being a winner, do you think it's odd that two winners are going after each other like this?
Yes, now there are so many of these people. What are there? Only three. Malcolm was the fourth person voted out. So there are just so many of them still that it's at your own expense as a winner when you're starting to take out other ones. This is something I've talked with you about for a long time, and argued with others that a good Survivor player would recognize how necessary it is to maintain relationships with good Survivor players, winners, and for some period of time in a game. And this game, for example, you have so many people and so many twists still left. I think being partnered with winners together, is a good thing. So it is a little bit odd for JT to be as focused on getting rid of Sandra now. And I think that's just evidence of his fear that she's dangerous. Well, clearly, everybody knows she's dangerous.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't fear that so much. I would be thinking, let's use our ability in the game for a while, maybe even to emerge, and then let's go for it. But if you start doing this now, winner on winner, JT so harsh against Sandra, he's setting himself up to be targeted as well. Although I've got to say this, it's so early and there's so many damn people that I could make an argument either way for many different things. JT isn't playing badly in general. He's really being quite calculated, I think, in a way that's impressive. He's moving through the game in a way that's comfortably keeping him from being the main target.
Yeah.
And that's good.
See, I feel like that he made himself into a much bigger target for that group after his actions from last night. Steven was arguing last night on the Know-It-Alls that JT was so concerned about Sandra that this was a move that he made that was worth risking his life in the game to try to get Sandra out at that point. And I thought it was too early and too ambitious to try to knock Sandra out. Do you agree with the risk of that move, where if it blew up, this was the situation he was facing, with the reward only being getting rid of Sandra?
So we all know risks are necessary in the game. I agree with you that it's too early to be so focused on another winner, but we won't know what the consequences of this are until next week, because even though they are talking as if, oh, JT did this and that and the other thing, and wow, they don't know. And it depends on how JT handles their reaction to his comments and gameplay within this last tribal council last night, whether or not he makes it through that unscathed or less damaged than they make it appear to be he will be.
Do you have any relationship with JT? Have you ever met him?
I think I have met him at Give Kids the World. But I'm not certain of that. That's how many survivors I've met.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm old, so my brain.
I think that maybe you're just trying to change the narrative, Rich.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm so old. Nobody would have to worry about me anymore.
I can't remember anything anymore, Rob.
Yeah, you're Rudy now all of a sudden.
Exactly. I'm almost there. I think I met him in Give Kids the World in Celebration Florida, but I'm not sure of that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to Sandra, because I know that that's somebody that you've had a lot of interaction with, and you have a good relationship with Sandra.
Oh, I do. Okay. I love Sandra. Yeah.
And so you think that she's come in and you feel like that she's played differently this season than she's played in the past?
I do indeed. And I don't think she's got a shot at winning. That's pretty, you know, a pretty bold statement to say this early, but the way she's playing and in front of other players talking about how certain she is, it's just, you know, I've seen it too many times. It's just a death knell.
What advice would you have given her before the season if she reached? I'm assuming that she didn't. If she did, what would you have told her?
Play like Sandra.
Yeah.
You know, Sandra doesn't care what happens as long as it's not her. But she doesn't. That was her thing. She doesn't talk about it. She didn't. She's never been so cocky verbally to her competitors. She's never taunted people this way. And it's a dangerous thing to do, because it's not really honest. It's not possible for you to really be quite that cocky in the actual game. You can be that cocky about yourself outside of it and talk about your skills and your awareness and how well you play the game. But within the game, as you're actually playing it, it's not possible to be that cocky, because as soon as you are, which she's being, I think she's undermined her chances. We'll see. But boy, some of the things she said are tough. I'm the queen and no chance of me going right there at tribal. You know, no chance. I'm not going.
But Rick,
that's just not reasonable.
I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm having such a hard time reconciling this, because I feel like that I have heard and probably said the same criticisms of you in Survivor All-Stars, where you came back to a season and I've just always presumed that you felt like it was a no-win situation, and that's why that you seemed as so confident and sure of yourself in that season as Sandra is being right now.
So if you remember when we talked about what you won't, because you have way too many things. When we talked about that, I tried to express my reasoning for the comments that I made. I don't believe I was ever too cocky, but I had to be a certain level of whatever you call that I'd been perceived to be by these players. And maybe you could argue that's what Sandra's trying to do. If she is, boy, she's overdone it. But remember, I talked about how if you come into a game and players think they know you, then you kind of have to be who they think you are, or they'll think you're playing them,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be even more targeted. So I had to cautiously be who they thought I was, which was a little more cocky in the game than I would have been.
Yeah,
but not like this. I would never taunt somebody with the idea of I'm not going anywhere. You're not doing this. There's no hidden immunity aisle over there. You know, I'm never going to say things that are so bold, so cocky, so provably wrong if someone chooses them to be.
So you're saying, yes.
And how about her comment? Now, this is a little separate from that, but how about her comment last week that the animals are there for her?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. You know, that plays into the you're not. I mean, I know it may be a religious thing, a Christian thing. It could be something that Christians believe, that animals are on earth for humans. I've heard, I think, of my born again uncle talk that way or something. Regardless of the reality of it, just thinking of the impact of statements like that on other players who may not have the same beliefs as you, and tying that to this like overconfidence that's seemingly exposed willy-nilly among the other players.
Now, hold on, Richard. Are you a vegan now?
No.
Okay. So you
are. No.
That as far as I know, you are a noted carnivore, a big fisherman.
Yep.
So
yeah. But the comment itself is what I'm talking about.
That the animals are there for us, you feel like is arrogant.
It's arrogant, and it exposes something to the other players about who you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's so dangerous. You like who was it? I think it was Malcolm that played that so well by talking to the camera about how he wasn't going to eat them. That just there's something, you know, it's just rubbing me the wrong way. I don't want to be perceived as someone who's killing the mother or the baby, and I don't really I'm not that hungry or whatever. But none of that was he sharing with the other players. You saw all the other players attempting to let other people be who they were. And then you hear her telling them, hey, the animals are here for us.
Yeah.
It's a sign of what she's doing, this overconfident thing that's being exposed to other players too soon, I think.
Yeah. I don't want to put too much importance on the goat. I think it was an interesting character moment, but you know, yeah. I think it's a little dangerous to let that define how we think of some of the players that are out there. Would you have eaten the goat, Rich? That's a lot of people wanted to know that.
I wouldn't.
You would not?
No, not a chance. And not because I don't eat goat, but because of the impact it would have had on too many people. And personally, believe it or not, even though I eat meat, I don't see the need to I wouldn't have seen the need to eat, to do that when it was the mother and the baby was there and the
Rich. Well, actually, but was that a baby shark that you killed on Survivor All Stars, or that was the dad?
No, neither. It was it was a good question. It was 2.5 feet, but it's a shark. People don't like sharks. I'm talking about the overall impact in general in real life, like what people actually think about what you're doing with animals, and there is this thing we have this feeling about babies and mothers and animals that's just very, very powerful.
Yeah.
And so I would have taken that into account with other players competition wise and for the impact it would have sent. And, you know, bottom line, were I starving? Were I hungry? Were it down to, oh, sure. Then it's not that I have trouble eating for surviving, but I have an issue, and I would have been sensitive to the idea of killing something for the hell of it, kind of sporty wise. I don't tend to do that, and I don't like the idea of it, and I wouldn't like the signal that it would send.
Okay. So, Rich, then in terms of some of the other people that we've gotten to see this season, a lot of people have been very impressed with Brad Culpepper. Do you have any feelings on Brad?
I do. The shift that he's made is drastic. What's interesting to me, and because I know a little bit about how reality it happens, you're out there and you're being filmed continuously, and they can only put so much in. I'm baffled that we haven't heard people talk about how different he's being. So he's doing it brilliantly. He's not being perceived by the others, because I'm certain the editors would have put in some comments if they existed about how well he's how calmly, how rationally, how reasonably he's interacting with the others. I feel like he's being thoughtful and patient and Jeepers, Crow, that's got nothing to do with how he originally played.
Do you think it was just that he played in such a small sample size and people didn't really get a good sense of who he was? Like, he was out of the game, what, maybe 10 days into it, went to Redemption Island, and people knew almost nothing about him. So that he does not have a long resume to change like some of these other people that are back for their third and fourth times.
That may have something to do with it, but my recollection, and you can tell me if I'm wrong because you remember more details usually, my recollection was that he was a lot more like I'm claiming Sandra's being, bold and kind of in your face. He was much less reasonable in the time that he was there.
Yeah.
I remember there being kind of conflict about who he thought he was, kind of thing. There's none of that now.
Yeah, well, he was really getting into it. It was a season with the Redemption Island, and there were loved ones involved, and you know, he was very, you know, very overprotective of his wife Monica, who was on the other tribe, and then really getting into it with the loved ones that were getting voted out, and then Candace Cody, that she was already on Redemption Island, and then John Cody got voted out, and then she was really giving it to him, and then Tyson was giving it to him.
Yeah.
So it was a very contentious situation there with the loved ones.
And he was full on in that. And in this, I feel like no matter how contentious it may get, no matter how many people may come at him, and we'll see how long he maintains it, I feel like he's really got it. I have to give many of these people credit for that. If they're coming to this, Aubrey is another one who I'm watching, who we're not seeing much of. It's so damn early. It's so damn early, and anything can happen. So all of what I'm saying is pretty meaningless, because down tomorrow, you know, this could all be different. But I'm just kind of throwing out there the things that are impressive if they're maintained and if they're intentional. You know, and if Brad's intentionally being reasonable as he's being portrayed, as he's been exposed to be so far, I think it's a really, really, really good move. And it will bode well for how he manages, because people's memories aren't that long. Mm-hmm. You know, they're reacting. This is what we do. Another human wonderful thing about Survivor. Even though we might have played with these people before or understood them to be a particular way, once we're in it, once we're down the line a little bit, we're reacting to who they are with us then now. And that's important to remember. I think Siri talked about that a little bit. You know, she has to be a particular way. So I don't know. We'll see.
Rich, I'd be so interested if you ever got the chance to play again to see how this would all go in practice. I think that it would be very, very fun to have you come back to the game. I really, you know, I hope as a fan of this game that we do get that opportunity, because I would love to see how this plays out in the lab and not just on paper.
Well, I would love to do it. And what I promise you is you would see something that you've never seen in Survivor before. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I just think it's so interesting, because when you came back in the All-Stars, you know, let's go, you know, big game hunting, and you were such a target. And I wonder if like newer players would look at you in that same way. And who knows? I mean, you cast such a shadow over the game that perhaps, you know, you might be just as big of a target now as you were, you know, all those years ago that we played in the All-Stars. But it really would be just so much fun to see if it you know, how it would play out.
It really does depend upon who was brought together in the game that you're talking about. Because even in this game, there are multiple pretty big targets, right?
Yes.
We could go through the list and we could say, well, this one ought to be a target, and this one definitely is a target, and this one ought to be a pretty darn, you know. So if I were amidst any number of, you know, perceived good players, then and we were all, you know, pretty well targets, my intention would be to play this game in a way that hasn't been done before, like with an honesty that I don't even think you could understand until you see it playing out. And I think it would be awesome.
Yeah, well, it would definitely be fun to watch. I would be concerned that I feel like that the way that the game is right now, I think that people, maybe less so than honesty, are just want to be comfortable. And I think that, you know, you really are just trying to put everybody at ease. It's an era where everybody is itchy to make big moves. And I think that you really need to keep everybody at bay from trying to, like, it's never been easier to make big moves in this game. And I think that the thing that is going to bring the most success is keeping people from making big moves, just by making them feel like that they're safe and it's warm near you and they'll be comfortable and have a shot to win if they can stay with you for the longest.
Right. Now, is that how you make them comfortable, though, is my big question.
I don't know.
I don't know anymore. And that's why I would play differently. When you say, you know, make them feel safe and warm and cuddly, like they don't have anything to worry about, that'd be the first person I'd be worried about. Mm-hmm. So my approach would be very different than how it's playing out now. But that's what makes a survivor player, I think, an effective one. The flexibility to evaluate what has been happening, what people are doing, what people are expecting, and to be a little bit beyond that. Even if at this point we're all pretty capable, if we're there with a bunch of other players who've played well, then it's bringing them, engaging them in a way that's real, and saying, look, we are decent. Well, let's move this contingent forward. And I think what you just described is happening too much. There's too much fear, and it's running too much of the game, and undermining too many people's chances in its being that way.
And do you think that fear is compounded by a twist like this, which really takes more power out of the hands of the players and makes things into a little bit more of a crapshoot?
It is compounded exponentially, but does it take things out of the hands of the players? I don't think so. I think it puts them in a pressure cooker, but I would argue that it doesn't take things out of the hands of the players. There was so much that could have been done. So many possibilities last night. That idol, come on. Ty didn't have to tell everyone he had it. Ty didn't have to play it for Sierra. Ty didn't have to. I mean, there are, you know, on both sides, it could have been done so, so differently. And I think Sandra is purely lucky that she sat there and just her confidence didn't get like smashed right then. I mean, that would have been so drastic for me to watch somebody talk the way she did. I would have been very, very concerned and may have changed everything up if I had the opportunity to do it there.
How do you mean?
So I'm challenging you a little bit. I hate the idea that particular, I've seen challenges where somebody's been put out of the game and it wasn't within the player's control in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. I think this was a lot more in player's control than maybe we're comfortable with yet, because it happened so recently, just last night.
Okay. Let's touch on some of the other players that are out there. A lot of people wanted to know, are you impressed with this new version of Ozzy that we're seeing? Again, a noted fisherman like yourself. We saw him catch a stingray last night. Were you impressed with the stingray Ozzy caught?
Well, I got to say that was nostalgic for me, because those blue spotted rays were the exact rays that I was catching. And I haven't seen them on the other islands. They're different kinds of rays. So that exact ray, I don't know how many I caught, probably 30 in the time that I was out there. And it was fascinating to see him catch it and to remember they're one of the most delicious fishes that there are. I mean, I can't even tell you how good they are. So I know they were enjoying that. But as far as Ozzy's gameplay, here's my concern. When he talks to the camera, not to the other players, and he's describing how valuable he is because of bringing in fish, I feel like that might be missing a beat. Because even though I was bringing in fish, that's not what made me valuable. And I think people know that as time goes by more and more and more and more, I think people will get rid of you, whether you're the provider or not, in a heartbeat. I think there are other things that are far, far more important. And we can only hope he gets those. So we'll see.
Yeah, we've established this in Survivor that people would rather go hungry for 20 days or whatever and vote out a threat, that bringing back the bringing home the bacon doesn't necessarily make you safe.
Right. Right. You know, I'll go without bacon.
Yeah.
You know,
but in terms of what Ozzy was saying, I wanted to know if you could weigh in on that. He said he liked to go fishing because for him, it was like a meditation. He was able to gain more focus and clarity about the game. Did you have that same feeling when you were out in the water?
Intensely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of the most enjoyable pieces because I was in my element. That is my element. I really, truly do enjoy it. And I maybe didn't call it meditation, but I can't tell you how rejuvenating that time alone in the water is and doing what you're doing. Here's the caveat. None of that peace, none of that rejuvenation is available unless you're comfortable enough with an understanding of what's happening back on shore. So it's not a willy-nilly go just to get away, do anything you want. You have to be out there strategically, asked to go by other participants because they're hungry at a particular time when you've just come back, let's say, from a challenge. And so you know what's being discussed and how it likely will be handled. You know, you never can know for sure, but there's always some risk in being away from other decision makers.
Yeah, that's certainly a fact. Talk to me in that same tribe. We have Troy Zan, who, much like JT, is down 5-1 in the numbers, but he has a hidden immunity idol. And we've been sort of speculating about how should he play this if he goes to one of the tribal councils in the next couple of weeks. Have you given any thought into what you would do in this situation if you were Troy Zan, down 5-1, but with the hidden immunity idol?
I have. I mean, my thought with respect to hidden immunity idols is that they are freewheeled way too frequently. And by that, I mean exposed. People talk about having them. People share them for other players. Sandra's original philosophy that she used to win two seasons had been focused on, if not the entire core of it, was about, it doesn't matter to me who goes as long as it's not me. That's contrary to this idea of being such a buddy, a bonded, oh, I've got your back. Hey, I've got an idol. Let me play it for you. So I would be cautious about how people are using it. So freely. And Ty, I don't know. Did he have to say he had it? Did he have to play it for Sierra? Did it benefit him in the way that it should for a good calculated player? Maybe, but I'm not sure. Troy having one now, you know, there's no way we can really predict what will happen, but I can only hope that he at least considers what's in his best interest when deciding how to use it or not.
What should he do?
Well, I think it's important to maintain as little exposure of that idol or idols, if you have more than one, as possible. But I think people use the idea of telling others that you have it pretty quickly as well. And I get the sense Troy may do that to bring someone into his his camp because he's so out on a limb.
It's such an interesting scenario. I don't know if we've ever had such a clear cut case like this in a group of six where we have maybe in the post merge game where we have somebody who has the idol. Probably if we go back to Survivor Worlds Apart, I think Mike Holloway might have been in a similar situation as being a person. I'm not sure if he had the idol or if he had immunity at that point, but here are five people. They all want to get rid of one person and they have the immunity idol. Now, what does he do? Does he just pick out the one person that he wants to send home and then not say anything? Or do they attempt to split the vote? Or should he try to flip that? That's going to be sort of a fascinating situation. And I think it really would have been very, very interesting to have if we had this scenario with the two tribes going to tribal council. If we would have had that scenario where here is also Troyzan out on an island by his own island by himself with the immunity idol, I think that would have been a really fascinating dynamic to have at that mixed tribal council.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, let's get a little, philosophical about what all
I'd love to.
This is happening here within the game, too. I mean, this is kind of a weird, this doesn't sit well with me. This whole Which idea thing? Of five against one. Why are they five against one? Because they were stuck on a team to start with. These people know
days.
One another. The 6 days. 6 days. And then they switch. And still you're referring to them and the show is referring to them and they're referring to one another as I don't even know what the names of these damn things. Mana, yeah, Tavawa, Nuku, yeah. Whatever. They make up a goddamn different name every 5 minutes. And what do they mean? They mean nothing. Let me just say it to me.
Yeah.
Zero. And I feel philosophically like that's a huge piece that's lost and has been lost for many, many seasons. Clearly seems lost now. And people are acting as if there is such weight. Now, if you're acting as if there's weight and that's a calculated approach and you're doing it intentionally and it doesn't mean anything, that's great. But I'm not seeing signs of that. I'm seeing signs that people are buying into this. Hey, we're a team. And hey, we're a team. And nope, we switched. And so now we've got all our team members and then this one other guy. It makes no sense. It made no sense in tribal council last night.
Yeah,
I would have been the first to point out, what the hell are you talking about? Because somebody gave you the same color buff. You know, that means we could switch tomorrow. We could switch three more times before this is over. And it only matters who gets to the end. And if you want to come to the end, come to the end with somebody who knows how to play the game. That's me.
Yeah, Rich, this is a great point. And it's interesting because it has happened in these returning player seasons. I know we saw the same sort of setup in the Second Chances season where people were together for 6 days and said, oh, but no, but we're Bion. We have to get rid of Takeo. I mean, even in the All-Star. I mean, that there was, you know, post-merge, it was like, okay, this group from Shapara is against Mogo Mogo, and it's all people that you knew each other, yet people that were, you know, good friends outside of the game, and it's like, no, I can't work with you because you are from this team, and just because you got an arbitrary color of the buff, but for whatever reason, this seems to hold. I wonder if it's because that everybody talks, you know, so much before the game start, but you don't know necessarily who's telling you the truth. And at least you have a sample size with some group. OK, I've been for 6 days. At least I know where this person is, as opposed to starting over with, yes, this person might have been calling me on the phone every day, but I have no idea, you know, if those checks won't bounce or not. If they're telling me, if they were just blowing smoke, at least I know where these people stand that I've been playing with for 6 days.
Yeah, but even in your words there, at least I know where these people stand that I've been playing with. Do you?
Yeah.
You don't. But people are believing they do. And again, you know, I'll say the same thing. If you're doing that, if you choose to do that, Rob, because you're aware that it's a benefit to you, at least they're thinking we're a team. Okay, I'll use this team because at least they're thinking we're a team. Then I can see it. But I'm watching as an observer of people, and I'm getting the real sense that these people feel like team members, and that fascinates me. That fascinates me.
I just think that there's this need for comfort and security and familiarity. And I think that people have, you know, they've been together for 6 days. I think something that people don't really understand that have never played this game is that 3 days is like 3 weeks in real life, where the time goes by. So you've been together with these people for just even, you know, 6 days in the game. It feels like you've known them forever. And it feels like that you have a better relationship with them because of the way that, like, the, you know, the days are long and there's hardships. So there is some sort of camaraderie there.
There is. And you've just hit on what is, what I think, some of the real beauty of Survivor. You're getting at who we are as humans. And those short periods of time do feel like real extended periods, because you're so exposed and you're so involved. That you wouldn't be with others at home, even probably close family members. You're not as continuously connected with these people. But that said, if you're the good player, you're an effective Survivor player, you've got to keep that brain aware that this bond, this 3 day whatever it is only a 3 day whatever it is. And if there are bigger fish to fry, if there are bigger deals to be made, bigger connections that will benefit you longer term, are you missing those because you've bought this team myth? You know, I don't know.
Right. I think that there's something to that, where it's almost like there's like a conversion of, you know, your Survivor values to your real life values. And you just need to remember, like, the exchange rate when you're thinking about, like, oh, OK, well, I've been friends with Brad Culpepper for 9 days. So I know that, you know, he's my best friend in the real world. It's like, no, wait, hold on a second. I got it. Like, that's not who I am. That's not what I'm doing. That's not why I'm here. And you know, it's really important. I think that a lot of times you see that shift after the family visit. People like see their loved ones and they say, oh well, yeah, that's right, that I gotta screw this guy over because I need to win this money to bring it home to my family.
Exactly. Yeah, the things that can shift people's ideas. I think the intelligent player thinks of those things ahead of time and will look for those opportunities that aren't so obvious and build those connections and not be so concerned about the, I don't even want to call them phony or false setups of the production team who put you on these teams, because I guess the argument I'm making to you is that they're not phony or false. They seem, for seasons after season after season, to be real. Mm-hmm. These connections seem to be real. They were holding in last night's challenge. I mean, last night's council. These 3 day, 6 day teams were holding, and what does that say? What's the point of that? I don't know, other than what you just described.
All right, Rich, you talked about it earlier. All right, tell me about Tony, because that I love Tony. But I know you were very hard on Tony on social media about him being the king of Survivor, as Sandra called him.
Okay, king of spaz.
Oh, Rich, come on.
King of Survivor. No, come on. Now, Rob, you play this game well. And so you cannot have sat and watched that gameplay and thought, wow, good player. It's just okay. So let's take 1 second to go back to his original gameplay. I've described Tony's gameplay originally as being characteristic of what I consider to be the luckiest player ever. And I don't often talk about, you know, luck in this game, but he himself, you know, admitted repeatedly throughout the game, I did it, and oh, phew, it worked out. Oh, it didn't work out, but damn, the next day it did. I mean, every move he made was almost every move he made was accidental, and sometimes it worked out. And by the end, he won, so it worked out more than it didn't. See, and I gave him credit for that.
I don't think accidental is the right word. I think he had an itchy trigger finger. He was overly impulsive. I think that that he had the impulse to do a lot of things. He did them, and that he ended up having to correct a lot of mistakes. You know, I compare it to he ran 200 miles to go 10 miles that he ultimately
itchy trigger finger. The accidental. But everything you just said is exactly what I said. That's accidental.
But accidental means like that there was no intention. He just like did, you know, 50 different things to get the one right thing. I wouldn't say that was an accident, like that there was some skill level to get to where he was, like, okay, you know, I won't say it was an accident. He wasn't Forrest Gump getting to the end of the game.
I can't say skill level. I have to say awareness, which I typically consider to be a big part of skill. But so I think you're right to point out that it seemed to me Tony was aware on some level, at least, of what should be done, mm-hmm. of how this game should be played. But he was not capable of riding that horse. He just couldn't. It was a bronco that was throwing him at every turn. And evidence of that is this season. This season, he wasn't even on the damn horse. He was literally, I think, losing it, like verbally and mentally, and talking about what he couldn't calm himself down to make choices. Yeah. He was just doing, and that reminds me of Sue Hawk coming up to me at the tree when I'm watching these people run around like chickens with their heads cut off, and she's telling me, you know, I'm a redneck, Richard. We do shit. We don't plan. We just do.
Corporate America is not going to play out here in the bush.
There you go. Well, the same dynamic here. I don't want to say Tony and Sue Hawk are the same. They're not. But Tony really, really, I think, let himself down in this season because he wasn't playing Survivor. He was really out there on a neurotic goose chase trying to find something to do, when very often the thing to do is to not do anything and to observe, mm-hmm. and to be calm. And I didn't see any capability of that. So I pointed it out, and people did think that that was harsh, but it wasn't that Sandra was calling him the king. I truly don't think of his gameplay as, up there in the grand, you know, scheme of playing well. I think, you know, I don't want to make this comparison, but I've got to use the name. In the same way that Russell doesn't understand the game of Survivor at all, because he doesn't know what it takes to win. He just thinks that his idea of playing is enough, and it's not. Tony doesn't have as well filled out a big picture of what the game really needs to be. He was too fearful. He was too frenetic, and he didn't grasp the idea of the social requirements that have to be at least understood to go a little further than he did.
Yeah.
You may disagree, but
no, I think that frenetic is a very good word to describe him. And I think he came back this season and didn't know how to get the target off his back. And I think he just thought that he could go twice as fast and that was going to somehow help him, that he could, you know, and maybe against a season of newbies that was going to work. But I think that he probably would have been much better off to go a quarter of the speed instead of twice as fast.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know what, Rich, I have to say that coming back into Survivor All-Stars, and you know, it is very much on my mind, you know, that I'm talking to you, and I feel like that this season could be headed in that direction where a lot of the, you know, bigger targets are going out early, similar to that season that we played back in. I thought coming into Survivor All-Stars with a bigger target, all right, let me just try to do nothing. Let me have nothing going on and people won't worry about me. And I didn't do a a great job. I feel like that I definitely made mistakes in my tribe, but I felt like especially in the first couple of days, I said, hey, if I seem like I have nothing going on, then people won't have a reason to get rid of me.
Right. Well, there's the in between here. So I agree with it. There's Tony. You know, the frenetic balls to the wall. What the hell is he doing? I mean, I picture the Tasmanian devil, honest to God. That's the image that comes to my head. And then there's you describing, you saying, if I just do nothing, there's the in between there that where the dance plays out for those of us who've played before and have a particular reputation. We can't do either of those extremes, and we've got to figure out how to be really playing well while not appearing to be losing our minds, while not appearing to be doing something at the expense of those people who will be our partners for some period into the game, and perhaps a long way into the game.
Right. And just to speak to my own shortcomings, where I think I did a fair job in trying to make myself not seem like a threat. Nobody thought I was scheming, or at least had a scheme going on. I didn't make that tribe fall in love with me. Like, they did not, were not missing me when I was gone. And I think that was the thing that I really should have improved on, was making myself much more valuable socially than I was able to do in my time there. Yeah, which is a still important thing.
You know, that would have had to be intentional, and it's not an easy thing to do. And we don't want people to think we think it's easy, but I think it is something that you would have to focus on to do. You have a target on your back because people know you understand the game. It's very similar to mine. And if I were playing with you, that's my biggest concern, would be how well you understand the game. And the flip side of that is you would also be a target for me of partnership because you understand the game. You can't play Survivor well with someone who doesn't understand the game.
Well, Rich, it is a big regret of mine that I never got to play the game with you back in that season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have been really fun to see. And people are going to give me shit about my ego here. I don't know that it's been done. I don't see a lot of people. I'm trying to think of examples of people who are really clear-headed about what Survivor is and what it requires playing with people of the same ilk. Mm-hmm.
I would have kept you around, Rich. I would not have been one of these people who was like, put this on my mantle. I voted out Richard. Maybe at the end. Sure.
Yeah. At the end, of course. And maybe not even at, you know, any time after the merge. Great. Or sure. Whatever. But it seems to me so blatantly stupid. Why don't people do it? Why don't people take good play? Why don't good players look for good players to bond with? Why don't we see that?
I don't know if it's ego or that people are just get paranoid. Like, we saw Sandra and Tony talk about in that first night of like, okay, this is the great alliance, this is perfect. And then Tony got in her face and Sandra said, okay, well, that's enough of that. Tony's got to go. And it's like, no, you guys need each other. You need that. Otherwise, eventually the target is going to be you.
True. Yeah.
It's not good.
Now, maybe, why didn't some of these people go for the super player like Caleb and just, you know, really bond with him? And oh, my gosh.
What are you saying, Rich?
I have to bring it up because this, what on earth? So, you know, you're straight. So for you, you've got to be saying, I'm looking and saying, OK, so he's really, really attractive. And that's a nice, you know, specimen to maybe that's why they brought him on. But you've got to be pounding your head going, what? Why is he here? Does he understand he's in a game?
So you're saying that you don't mind that Caleb is back because he's aesthetically pleasing? Is that what you're saying?
I kind of mind that he took the place of a position of somebody who might have been a real game changer. Yeah. I understood why he came back because he didn't have enough time in the game, probably, and he is that good looking. But To have a season like this where I'm really, really hopeful we see some bonding of some real good, skillful players, and I'm not seeing it yet. I just had to point out that there was one slot, that one at least, that Woo! Game changer. Yeah, I guess it would. That changes the game from Survivor to, we can call it something else. Camp. I don't know.
All right. I'm trying to think. Who else in this cast do you have any sort of relationship with or past history with? Is there anybody?
Well, I think I've met most, not all of them, but I've met most of the folks. I haven't met Zeke yet. I'm looking forward to meeting Zeke. We were going to meet. He's up here in New York, pretty close to me. We were going to meet at one point, and he ended up going on business travel. So I still haven't met him yet. I'm always fascinated to watch Ty because he's just such an interesting player. There are many, many people I'm watching now and I'm interested in for many different reasons. You know, Michaela, I'm interested in because I want to see if she's even capable of doing it differently, knowing that she needs to.
Okay. Talk to me about, this is a question that I have for you from Taylor Martina. How does Rich think an old school player like Varner is adapting to the pace of the new school game? Obviously, that you probably have, you know, at least seen Jeff Varner a ton of times over the years. I always associate you two because I remember way back when that season was on that people talked about him like, oh, this is the guy who's going to be the next Richard Hatch. Now, do you have any feelings watching Jeff back this season?
So I do. So I've not interacted with Jeff very often. We've met at a couple of events. I don't know him very well. I know his boyfriend very, very well. Okay. I'm very, very close to his boyfriend, but I don't know Jeff very well. As I watch Jeff, and let me respond to the question first before I talk about watching Jeff. Your question, the person who asked the question talked about him being an old school player. That bugs the living crap out of me because it talks as if there is such a thing. And it then has viewers thinking that this group, anybody from this season back or whatever, is an old school player. It's really hogwash. That's really utter nonsense. From the literal first season, from my season, the original season on, there have been a variety of play types in each game. Many, if not most, of the players who've played Survivor have not been playing, period. Just haven't been playing well, don't understand the game, period. So that in itself, and there's such a large number of those people, and that bugs people when I say that, but it's just damn true, that you can't put all of them in and call them old school players. Many of them, if not most, aren't playing. They're there. They're pawns. They think they're doing something as they're running around, but they're not really playing Survivor.
I think a lot of them self-identify as old school players, as in like, oh, you know, us old school players, we had it a lot harder than this new school with their idols, and they get so much
stuff. I played
stuff
in 2001, and I played in 2000. That makes me an old school player. That's what I'm ranting about. It bugs the living hell out of me because there isn't such a thing, unless you want to label it that, unless you want to play anybody who's played before 2010, you're an old school player. Well, that's great. And it means nothing. So shut the hell up and stop using the term, but go ahead and call it that.
All right. So, talk about Jeff Varner.
Yeah. So regardless of what you called him or how you thought he played, we who played in the earlier seasons didn't all play the same. We all played very, very differently. And Jeff, who was on Australia and Cambodia, played differently. And I was hoping that he would. Here's what I'd hoped. Jeff, from my perception, is more of an emotional player than I wish for him to be. Mm-hmm. And I wish by this time that he would have had a better handle on his emotions. I don't know the impact of that yet or whether he actually does. But even in the face shots last night where he was crying after having lost the challenge, and even not the crying, even just the shots of his disappointment, you could tell that that was real. And anytime you're being you're exposing those kinds of real, absolute, true core emotions, which are wonderful to have. We're all humans. We have them. We're, you know, but in this game, you're risking them being used by others, them being exploited by other people. And you're signaling to good players that you are emotional and that there are openings there somehow, if you can figure out how to exploit those emotions. So I don't have a lot of detail. There isn't much in the game. One thing I've noticed is how little we're seeing of some of these players, like Jeff, Aubrey. I don't know. Even Siri, I'm not seeing that much. And
do you know Siri at all?
I don't. Again, I'm going to say I think I might have met her at Celebration at Give Kids the World. But
yeah.
But I'm not certain of that. Actually, I have met her. I have for sure. I have met her.
Yeah. Rich, is there any Survivor player that you feel like that you are especially close with? Is there anybody that I know that you don't spend a lot of time socializing with the Survivors, but is there anybody that you feel like that you have a especially tight relationship with?
Oh, gosh. I think I would say that there are a lot of them, but for different reasons than you might think. Like over time, I've ended up spending more time with, like, say, Bob Crowley.
OK,
he lives in Maine. I don't even know how to describe how much I adore him and his family. They do something for me because of what beautiful people they are that it's hard to describe. So I feel close to them. But there are people all the way through from the beginning, from my season, who I feel really, really friendly with. I'd say Tina and I are quite close. We don't do a lot together. We probably think differently about any number of things, but I consider her a friend. My husband was going to some training in the military down passing her state, and I called her to talk about whether he'd spend the night there. You know, I'm close to any number of people. I could probably give you a list of maybe 50 mm-hmm. out of this, 500 and something of them. I consider you a friend, and we never get together.
Yeah.
But if I had a question about Survivor or even, something else, sure. I might call you about how to put something together or, a podcast or whatever. I'm not a heartless, cold bastard who wants nothing to do with anybody. That's me in the game.
Yeah. No, I hope that you don't feel like that was the impression that I was putting out there. But I'm just curious to know, because I know that you are not you're not big at socializing in terms of going to all these parties and stuff like that. So I was just curious if there were any people that you got together with or talked with on the phone.
Yeah, no,
because for me personally, I spend so much time talking to survivors in my work, but socially, I don't do a lot with other people from Survivor. I mean, I really, to be frank, I really don't do anything with anybody else except for my wife and my kids.
So, same here.
Yeah.
It's same here. My husband and I love our quiet downtime. I mean, here's what I fantasize about. This will it's not even a Survivor
family podcast. Okay.
Yeah. Family podcast. And I'm still able to tell you what I fantasize about. That should tell you something. A guy who won Big Brother, Ian Terry.
Yes. Yes.
Is this awesome, backgammon player.
Yes.
I can't find anybody to play backgammon with. I envy his life. I see him playing backgammon, doing a backgammon show. I really love the way he talks. I feel like I could sit for hours and play backgammon with Ian. I don't even know him.
Are you in contact with him? Do you need me to make a introduction?
No. I actually reached out to him on Twitter a couple of times. And somebody was going to send something, but he's in Texas or something. But I mean, he'd think I'm a stalker at this point. I swear to God, I'm thinking I'll go to Texas just to play backgammon with him. I just wish there were some folks around who really enjoyed it and played it well. Yeah. But somehow it's just not one of those things. But that's what my point is.
Have you ever played with my family? Tina in backgammon?
No, I didn't even know she played.
Yeah, I think that was her luxury item in Australia.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah. Huh. I'm pretty sure that was that. And I think somewhere along the way, there was like, she like made some sort of like backgammon survivor metaphor of, you see, there's these white pieces and the black pieces and you gotta move them. Something like that along the way. this is a great question from Derek, who wanted to know, Rich, what was your take on the Brett and Zeke scene from last season when they were on the reward challenge together?
So that's interesting. That's why I reached out to Brett. I reached out to Brett and Zeke because Brett's in Boston and Zeke's down there, and invited them to Newport because I thought, what a great place for the three of us to get together and meet or whatever. I ended up going up to Boston, and or actually we met in Providence. Brett and I got together so I could meet him and have dinner and whatever. We had a really nice night. But here's my reaction to that scene. First of all, I had no idea that Brett was gay. I mean, zero. And so I didn't understand what was happening while I was watching it.
Legendary gaydar.
Yeah, I do. I thought. Again, I'm getting old. I must be losing my touch. But I just didn't sense it. I didn't have any idea. I didn't have any hints ahead of time. Nothing whatsoever. Clearly, I knew Zeke was gay. Yeah. But I didn't know what he was talking about when he said, you know, you're not the only gay out here. I'm thinking, well, who the hell else? I'm thinking, who's he talking about?
You're gonna out somebody.
Yeah. So I thought it was really funny. And then I was intrigued to figure out, so what was his story? You know, how was it being a Boston cop? Why on earth in this day and age were you not out, you know, for as long as you weren't? And all that's fascinating to me just because of who people are. But so that was interesting to watch and to be surprised in a way that I rarely am.
Yeah.
Like that.
Rich, so then I had heard, because I saw Brett last night, that he was at our live show, and he was eating it up with that crowd there at the show. I heard that you guys had dinner. How was that?
It was great. It was really good. I had a lot of fun. He's a really easy guy to talk with and to hang out with. Oh, you know, you're asking about friends and stuff. And, you know, Stephen Fishback now lives in Providence. Yes, so yes. There's just no reason we shouldn't be, you know, but we haven't gotten together yet either. He was going to come that night, but he got sick. So I didn't see him, and I haven't met his girlfriend yet. I've heard she's phenomenal. Yeah. So I really look forward to meeting her. And so that's somebody who's really, really close. And then if we don't spend some time together, that would be disappointing to me because I like him on any number of levels. He's interesting, like you, very, very bright, lots of interests in various areas. So I think I'll have fun connecting with him, I hope.
Yeah, well, I actually had the pleasure of getting to have dinner with Steven even before we did the show last night, which was nice. And it was nice to get to, like, in those moments where we get to have dinner before we do a show, we tend to not talk about Survivor to sort of, right, like, not waste anything that we're going to use in the show. So yeah. That's, like, one of the few times that I get to talk to him, and it's not just, like, work-related and Survivor related. And that was a lot of fun last night. Rich, you know, have that, if I may ask, I'm not sure, have we ever talked about, do you have a interesting coming out story, or that was never a question for you? Because you went to, correct me if I'm wrong, you were in the military, right?
Yep. I was in the military. I went to West Point, and people who were close to me while I was at West Point knew I was gay. I was sexually active while I was there, so there were people who knew. But it's an odd thing to describe, because I never was I never encountered ever in my life any like prejudice or negativity that I was aware of as a result of being gay. But I also never really kind of talked about it. Like, my family didn't know I was gay until my late 20s. So I never even mentioned it to people. It just was a part of who I was. And I left my hometown when I was 18. And so I kind of lived openly, but I'd never, not at home. I lived, you know, I joined the army. I was in different states, in Texas and all over the place. So do I have a coming out story? Not really. No, I mean, it was who I was. I guess when it comes to my being gay, the biggest shock was going on Survivor, being who I am, and then having the world, knock me in the head because of that.
Yeah.
It's the first time I encountered blatant bigotry.
And how did that ultimately present itself to you? Because there wasn't social media. Like now people would go on Twitter or go on Instagram or go on Facebook. As though, like, would you get letters?
Well, I would get I still have emails from people that were amazing to me. I can't even think of some of the nasty ways that people would say some of the things they say, and but it was awful, kind of like, wow, you're what an idiot. I always knew this is a good thing. So it didn't bother me even when I got it from them. I always knew that it was, even as a teen, when I started to figure out that these weren't the feelings that all guys had. I thought all guys felt this way for other guys, and eventually you just marry a woman anyway and you have kids, and I just thought that was normal. Yeah. But once I figured it out that I felt differently, I didn't have like a self-esteem issue after a while. I recognized that it was the other people's problem. So as I was getting these really hateful emails and things, I recognized that it was their issue. But it was a very interesting time when I could then think about who it was that I shared this country with, that who it was that was out there, and how they actually felt about other people. So it was enlightening, and it only grew as I started to learn about how so many people in power used their own bigotry and prejudices to abuse others, and that it was their own insecurities. But even though it was their own insecurities, for the first time in my life, I realized that we who are the underdogs, we the minorities, for whatever reason, whether it's being black or being gay or being a transsexual or whatever it is now, we are harmed in ways that this not caring what other people think doesn't take care of. It's not enough for me to have the self-esteem to recognize that it's their problem. I can still be devastated. I can still be destroyed. And to this day, I maintain and believe I can prove to anyone who's interested how our broken justice system mm-hmm. did that to me. For no other reason than my being gay and atheist, probably just as much as being gay.
So I want to just make sure I'm following what you're saying. So that your experience with the legal system when you went to jail, that there was something about that experience that changed you. I'm sure it can't not change you also to
correct.
Through what all of the, the time that you went through.
Yeah, what it said about who we are and what we do to people and what we try to exact in the name of bigotry. I learned so much. I don't think of myself as naive, but I was naive about who we are as a people, and I was naive about who those in power are. It's certainly clear that the people in power who could have done something to help ferret out what was true didn't, and that what was true didn't matter. And, we don't even need to get into any of it. It just didn't matter. What was true about the situation did not matter in any way, shape, or form. This was about taking the caricature of who this guy was on Survivor and exploiting that for personal gain by corrupt prosecutors, bigoted judges, avoidant corporate entities mm-hmm. and power. It was a lot of sad but interesting things that I learned.
Yeah. And how did that change you now?
So now, when I'm honest, I still will be as honest as I can be, but I'll always keep in mind that the impact of my being honest could be harmful both to me and my family. Mm-hmm. So I probably won't go out as far on a limb as I would to expose what I would hope people already know is there, but that we don't.
Okay. Let me ask you, Ryan Hilliard wants to know, Richard, did working as a corporate trainer prepare you for Survivor? How did that background working with companies get you ready for Survivor when Sue Hawk did famously tell you that corporate America wasn't going to play in the bush?
So one of the things that I learned really, really clearly in being a corporate trainer, and I owned my own company for probably 16 years, I taught communication type courses, conflict management, et cetera, all over the country for all those years. And I encountered thousands of people actually in doing so. And what I learned is what it's like to be, connected, what I needed to do to help people understand something that they didn't quite get yet, or even to learn what it was that they wanted to learn. And those kinds of things proved invaluable in this game. It turns out that that's what Survivor is. It's about understanding the people you're playing with and learning about what it is that they need from you, how it is that they're likely to react to what it is that you're doing or others are doing, and those kinds of observations and perceptions, I think, were all honed in my corporate training days.
Could you give people any practical advice that they can use in their current working lives that they could take from Survivor? Like, what do you think is like a really important lesson people could actually get some benefit out of from watching this show?
Yeah, so watch the show. This is something I've talked about a number of times with so many people. They're like, how the hell can it be on season 34? You're crazy. How's it still going? Survivor, I think, is better than college, better than most other forms of education if you're open to understanding what you can learn by watching it. Survivor exposes who we are. And you have the opportunity as a viewer when you're watching the show to ask yourself what you would do in any of the scenarios, in any of the pairings, in any of the situations in which you see someone making choices. Would you make that choice? What do you feel about how that person's choice impacted others? How would you do it differently? Why would you do it the same? Those kinds of things enable us, the viewers, to explore introspectively who we are, and that helps us be better everywhere, not just at work, but in our lives, in our families, in our friendships, in all relationships, as parents, as kids, as siblings. And I don't think we do that. I don't think we're in anywhere near, particularly Americans, since I'm quite well traveled in this world. I think I can say with some authority that particularly Americans lack the introspectiveness of so many other people in other countries that I think Survivor gives us the opportunity to explore. And that being introspective is what can enable us to be healthier, happier, more engaged in this, you know, what I think of as short journey we call life.
Now, okay, well, let me segue from that, Rich, to a couple of weeks ago. It was very sad when the star of Battlestar Galactica, who shares your name, Richard Hatch, passed away. Steve Isaac wants to know, how many messages did you get when that Richard Hatch died? Because I think a lot of Survivor fans especially saw the headline about Richard Hatch passing away and thought before reading the rest of the story that something had happened to you.
So I was touched, believe it or not. You know, I'm pretty brusque in these conversations that you and I have. And in general, I'm pretty direct and I think I'm known a little bit for being what some people consider harsh. People who get to know me understand that it's from a good place, that honesty is something I really strive to use at all times, and that my intention is never to hurt anyone's feelings. In fact, just the opposite. I hope that my being this way lets somebody know that we can get closer and that I am open to hearing your actual honest thoughts. You don't have to play that superficial party game with me. And in fact, I'm off put by it. Yeah. So I expected something different than what happened. When Richard died, I got literally hundreds of messages, not one single snarky negative one. All of them were, you know, no, way too soon. Oh my God, the game has lost, you know, blah, blah, blah. they were shocked, and they were all positive, and it was fascinating. I couldn't respond to them. They were just, I mean, wait, it was like birthdays.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do. You know?
But in a way, it's like that Huckleberry Finn thing that you got to attend your own funeral in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. In a small way, I got to see how people reacted, and that was heartwarming.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really, really crazy. What a surreal thing to have gone through.
It was strange. You know, Richard and I never met in person, but we probably, I don't know how many years ago, several years ago, we did get to talk a couple of times on the phone, and found out that we were each getting the other's fan mail, and that was nice, because then we just sent it to one another.
Yes. Okay. And was it possible that any of the mean emails that you got were intended for that Richard Hatch?
No, the mean ones were intended for me. Okay. You mean early on? No, they were definitely
intended. Yourself, oh, this must be for the Battlestar Galactica. That's yeah. What you should have responded to those people, like, oh, I'm sorry. You must have the wrong Richard Hatch.
Yeah, the Battlestar Galactica Richard Hatch wasn't gay, as far as I know. And these were all just really, really hateful, homophobic emails. Really interesting. Like, who sits down and writes crap like that? And then you think, well, that's really in your head. What's wrong with you? Wow. What on earth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To take it to an email. Sure. This is for question from Bob Marassa, who wants to know, do you think that last night's twist would have been better if they put them on the same beach prior to Tribal? Would you have liked that more, Rich, if they would have given them like the afternoon? All right, you'll go back to your camps as one, or go back to one beach and then go to Tribal Council, or you were fine with the way they did it?
I spent a little time thinking about that, actually. You know, you don't give me these questions ahead of time. I didn't know you were going to ask that. But the idea of what happened last night and how production-wise we were prevented from being included in so much of the conversation, I thought that could be done differently. It could easily be required that anything that's said be said loud enough that your mic can pick it up so that it can be shared with viewers. It might be facilitated that people could have conversations if they wanted. So you could only talk if you grabbed somebody and you pulled them over to the side or whatever. And they hear this,
Rich,
your question.
I saw people said they should bring the conch shell back.
Yeah, that won't work. I don't think, because that slows down the reality. I think we have sufficient technology that we don't have to wait and go one by one. We can capture all of the conversation, and we can put a what do you call it at the bottom of the screen?
Subtitles,
and we can make sure that viewers understand what's being talked about. But we didn't do that well last night. And if people were to have been thrown together on the beach before that, maybe you could have captured more of the dynamic, but I think that would have led to less intrinsic, less real, less genuine scurrying. And I think it's okay that the viewers get treated to some scurrying. You know, if that's the twist, deal with it. You know, it's kind of the way I look at it, and that's where I say Malcolm could have improved his game. He could have understood that were he subjected to having to scurry at some point, you know, he could have thought through what he might need to do and do a little bit more, be involved a little bit more, take a little bit more control, take a little risk of being in control rather than sitting so confidently in the idea that he's playing well.
Yeah.
So I don't know about doing the beats ahead of time. I'm not as off put by the twists as so many people seem to be. I think part of the idea that they exist thrills me because it keeps the game fresh. And I like that we don't know what they are. I don't like when they are so dramatic or so designed that they really do take all circumstance outside of the player's hands. And I don't think that did that last night. Okay. So I'm fine with it.
Jack Linehan wants to know, what are your thoughts on a live tribal like last night? Should literal huddling of groups be frowned upon? Did you like how they were standing up, walking around, getting up off of their benches? I felt like that it was fine last night, but I feel like that this could be a slippery slope where we're going to see people like walking off and having side conversations at the tribal council.
I agree with you. I think Jeff made a joke of it in like, oh, okay, so you guys are in charge of tribal council now. He didn't say that out loud, but his face was saying, oh, Haley, you're ready? Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. Oh, no, you're not ready? All right. Well, whenever you're ready, which was funny. I thought Jeff handled that well. But I think absolutely, you just nail on the head. I think that is a slippery slope, and it could go to some place that would be boring as a viewer. So it won't. They won't let it.
Yeah.
And I think there are ways to prevent that, you know, just simply ahead of time, letting people know how they are required to interact and that if they have something to say, they can say it, but they've got to say it in a way that it can be heard.
Rich, we just celebrated the 500th episode of Survivor. Obviously, you were there at that very first tribal council. Was there anything in particular that you were really just moved by with 500 episodes? Or where did your mind go when you heard about 500 episodes?
Well, the number is kind of arbitrary for me, the 500. But just the idea of the length of the show is kind of...
because I think... was the 17th anniversary of you guys going to go leave for Borneo recently, correct?
Yeah. People send me messages on those anniversaries all the time. The first day you landed on the beach, the first day, you know, the first when you were voted the winner was 10 years ago today. You know, I get that all the time. And those markers are interesting. They just bring back for me the length of time that has passed and what's transpired since then. And often they lead me to think back at what was going on because I still enjoy the game. You know, I still watch it like you do. And I appreciate Survivor for what it is and for what it says about who we are. So,
yeah,
you know, 500 particularly. Oh, that's interesting. I'm glad it's lasting. But you could say 34 seasons and I have the same reaction. Wow. You know, it's still there and it's still good.
Rich, I know you recently did a Reddit AMA. Anything interesting happen with Reddit?
Yeah, that was the first time I'd done one of those, and I liked it. I liked the idea of people having creative questions, thoughtful things that they wanted me to consider and to help them understand or whatever. I enjoyed it. It was challenging for me because...
Yeah.
I'm someone who likes to be accurate and they, you know, there were just question after question, so I couldn't get to them all and answering them fully, was challenging, but I did the best I could and I got lots of feedback about how appreciative people were. So I think it worked out well.
Now, Rich, I've made this prediction before. I think eventually there's going to be an all winners season. I really think that this is the shot for you to play again. What do you think is the holdup? Is there any holdup with you going back to the show in terms of do you feel like that there is do you feel like that anybody is saying I don't think that this is a good idea from the side of network or production or anything like that?
They may be saying it's not a good idea for me. I don't know what they think of me or don't think of me, but, you know, based on all that's transpired. But I think that the idea of an all winners season is a great idea. And for me personally, that would eliminate some of that target thing or my target being so much bigger than others. I mean, all winners would still have people thinking, well, who were the more significant winners? Who were the more calculated winner? You know, those kinds of things. So you'd still have targets, but I think in an all winners season, there would be more people who would likely understand the value in working with good players for as long as possible.
Do you want to apologize to Sandra or Tony for anything you said in this podcast to prepare for the all winners season?
Yeah, that sounds like me.
Rich, you said you have to not be so cocky going into the new season.
Yeah, see, now there I think you have confused the idea of cockiness and honesty. You know, I mean, I have nothing to apologize for. I think Sandra's screwing up, and I think that's just true. And I think Tony was gone. I think he was, you know, frenetically lost. But I don't think any less of either of those people. I love Sandra, and I'm sure I'd like Tony if I met him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope you get that chance, Rich. I said it before, but I think it would really be a thrill to watch you play the game. And hopefully you've got one more good run left in you.
At least.
Yes. Yes. okay. Well, Rich, what else is going on? What do you, anything you want to tell people to check out?
No, no idea what I'm up to. I'm having my knee replaced next week, so I'll be ready.
Okay.
for the next
What's going
season.
On with your knee?
Oh, it's shot. There was a torn meniscus, but now I don't even have a meniscus.
Oh, no.
So the meniscus is gone. So they're going to put a new knee in and I'll be good as gold.
Okay. All right. Well, you could follow Richard on Twitter. He is at Hatch Richard. So there you go. I'm trying to see. Did you say anything interesting about the episode on Twitter last night? Anything that really got people going?
I don't know. I didn't really want. Sometimes I'll tweet something out, but not even pay attention thereafter, just because I wanted to make a point of it.
Yes. Okay.
I think I said I've got my eye on Aubrey, and that's more about how little I've seen of what's going on than anything else. I'm always a little bit cautious when I don't see too much. I know Aubrey's a good player. When I think of this season as game changers and I look back at some of the people that played well and Aubrey played well, I wonder why I'm not seeing too much. So I said something about that.
Yeah.
But I could say lots more about every one of them. There are just too many. It's too early.
Yes.
For me, I start getting more vocal and it starts being more meaningful as we get to the merge, because there are just too many people and the dynamics of the game require that they all go. So when it gets narrowed down, then it becomes much more interesting to me.
And Rich, lastly, do you want to talk about, you were about to be a proud grandpapa as tell me about your dog.
So I was wondering if you could hear the whining. I've got my,
I did at one point. Yeah.
Did you really? Yeah. So my hand is reaching down. I'm like trying to keep her quiet. She's the size of a watermelon. It's unbelievable. She's such a cute little girl, but she's about to give birth and it's literally any minute. I mean, it could be right now. It could be tomorrow. Could have been 2 days ago. So we don't know what's happening, but she's just ready to pop. And all she wants is me to rub her stomach continuously.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been that's what I've been doing. That's what I've been focused on.
All right, Rich. Well, again, always a treat to catch up with you. Best of luck with the impending puppies and everything else. And I'll talk to you again soon. Okay.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks a bunch.
Okay.
You all have a good one.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Richard Hatch here on Rob Has a Podcast. Always a treat. I don't know how many interviews that I've done with Richard over the years. I got to feel like this is probably like the seventh or eighth time that I've talked to him on the show, and it is always a treat to hear that voice and remember watching him all the way back then. So another fun one with him today. All right, so this is the last podcast that I am going to be doing while I am here in New York. The next time you are going to hear me on the podcast, I am going to be talking with Liana Boris on the voicemail show. So if you're listening to this on Friday morning, there's still time for you to get a voicemail in. robhitsawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. I'll get into all of that. Plus, we will get to the wiggle room and why Malcolm lost. And I challenged David Bloomberg to come up with what Malcolm did. Rich says there's a lot of things he could have done differently, but what did he do wrong? That we will find out on Tuesday on Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, thanks so much to all of our new patrons that have come on board. I know a lot of people came on after the live know-it-alls. We greatly appreciate that. Had a lot of fun with the patrons over the last couple of days. So great to see so many of the faces that I see all the time in the patron Facebook group. If you'd like to find out more about what we're doing over on Patreon, you can visit us anytime and see my video that I made about behind the scenes at Rob Has a Podcast at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Lots of benefits there at all the different Patreon levels. Really helps to support the podcast, keep everything going. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Big thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who was the MVP of this week. Got all of these shows up and really allowed me just to concentrate on recording and moving on to the next thing. So thanks so much to Scott for all of his hard work this week. Job well done, Scott, and really appreciate it. Talk to you all again very soon on the next episode. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.